The Afterglow by Rose Burley. Part of the Romance by Ida Pollock collection. Narrated by Catherine Moran for Saga Egmont. Chapter 1. Lacey couldn't help but overhear what was said as the doctor emerged from the sick room.
"Too much sun,"
he was quite firm.
"And possibly also a little run down. How long before half term?"
Half term? They had only just returned after the long summer vacation. And although, in the height of summer, the effects of the sun on those lower slopes of the mountain that gazed at its reflection in the lake could be quite harmful, especially to a delicate and sensitive skin, it was highly unlikely that they could prove injurious to a sun-soaked young woman like Fleur Beringer, who boasted that she had been born and brought up in the Bahamas, and whose people still lived there. Why, she had actually returned to the École d'Unité looking like a veritable daughter of the sun, with that naturally honey-blonde skin of hers and those melting pansy-dark eyes. And she talked of surf-riding and blistering temperatures that had absolutely nothing in common with the gentle heat on the mountain at this season of the year, when all the surrounding forests were turning rosily russet and mellowest amber, because the fall of the year was upon them, and very soon now it would be winter. And then, no doubt, if Dr. Roger Soames remained in his present position as locum for Dr. Felix Dupont during his absence from Ardina, a fresh outbreak of complaints more in keeping with the lowered temperature would demand his attention at the École, and girls like Fleur and Carla Minetti and Rose Bly and a whole host of others who found him devastatingly attractive would take to their beds and turn their faces to the wall and moan a little for sympathy. The sympathy of Dr. Soames, who had blue eyes and light hair and was practically everyone's preconceived image of what a typical Englishman in his early 30s ought to look like, even to his mildly humorous smile and the note of humour in his voice. And when, with a shapely tanned thumb on a leaping pulse, he asked in that humorous voice in a perfectly kindly way, "Now, what's wrong with you? Tell me all about it." The highly impressionable 17-to-20-year-olds developed a new ailment, and that was centred in the region of their hearts. Lacey, who felt rather tight-lipped and disapproving because a fellow countryman was allowing himself to be taken in, heard the matron, a Scotswoman, also with a sense of humour, but badly in need of her present highly paid position, trying not to disagree with the doctor, but pointing out gently that girls sometimes fancied they were more ill than they actually were. And sometimes they even fancied they were ill when they were not ill at all.
"You know how it is, doctor."
She spread her hands in a gesture she had picked up as a result of spending years on the continent.
"They're at a difficult age, and by rights, some of them should be married. And if their parents had any sense, they'd get them married instead of paying to send them to a school like this. There isn't enough to keep them occupied."
"You mean there isn't any hockey playing or lacrosse here?"
"Only tennis, and the inevitable sunbathing when they've got nothing else to do. Some of the more energetic ones go riding, and a few of them are members of the local sailing club. And in the winter, there's the winter sports. Fortunately, it won't be long now before we go higher up the mountain to our winter chalets."
"And you find the girls are generally healthier in the winter?"
"Oh, I think so."
"Ah, well."
He smiled at her, and her somewhat dour Scottish heart melted.
"Girls will be girls. Unfortunately, they're not really my problem. But I sympathise with you, since they appear to be yours. You'll have to watch that little Rose Bly. She really is delicate. Rather a fragile little piece."
"Her father manufactures pottery, I believe. Anyway, he's something to do with China. English-born China."